Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. In studio tonight, Bill Arnold. Across the way is George P. Fraser.
Yes, sir.
And on the board, Aaron M. Hello, Aaron. He doesn't have a mic. George, we have a great show tonight. We have Jamie George going to be on the line. Come on at us from Tennessee tonight. I Googled Jamie George, and I got pastor, trainer, MD, or violinist. Which one do you think it is?
Pastor.
You are correct. You are correct. And he has written a book called Living Well, and it's talking about getting unstuck. And George, in the recovery business and people dealing with addictions, getting unstuck is a big deal.
Oh, it's a big deal for all of us that are Christians. We had to get unstuck to become a Christian, but then we get into these behavior patterns, especially as addicts, that we keep getting in more and more trouble, and we don't know what to do, and we're kind of a perceived helplessness, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And getting unstuck is huge.
It's huge, and I think it's something that people are dying for help with, and they're certainly not going to get it from us, right?
No, they're not going to get anything from us.
So that's why we go to the bullpen and we pull in Jamie George.
We have good guests every week. That's why.
We do, and I feel like a kinship with him because he has two first names, as do I, and he probably got hassled like I did in life.
Yeah, well, you got hassled for more than just your name.
Really?
So I'm sure for him it
really?
Was. Yeah.
You want to make something of this right now?
You know, a tough guy behind 4 inches of glass.
George, I've been thinking.
I'd have to get up. No, I don't want to make anything of anything.
Yeah. George, I've been thinking lately in the last couple of days about something you said on the show last week. It's stuck in my brain. And it was a line you made, you said about our beliefs are what we want to be, is who we'd like to be, and our brokenness is who we are.
Right.
And when I was looking at some of Jamie's materials in his book, he was talking about the fact that there is a lack of honesty sometimes in churches. It's a lot easier to go be honest in a recovery group than it is in a church.
Sure.
And let's be honest. We need to be honest in church. We need to show up and be able to bring all of our stuff there and lay it at the foot of the cross.
I'm with you on that. For me, I'm on my best behavior at church. I start, you know, speaking in Christianese. How you doing? I'm blessed. I never say that outside of church.
No.
And so for me, in recovery groups, it's okay to be who I am. I'm trying to be more like that in church, but I got to be honest with you. I don't want to be on every prayer list in town either.
Yeah, you're going to scare a lot of people away, too.
I would scare a lot of people.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, you're already kind of living in isolation, so you don't want to make that. You don't want to push that envelope any further.
You're right. People find me very annoying.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, I'm trying to work on my consistency. Hey, you know what? Real recovery is about changing from the way we used to be through the power of Jesus Christ. And we believe all Christians are in recovery. If you're a chemically dependent person who hasn't had a drink in a while, congratulations. We believe addiction is idolatry. And if you don't have Jesus Christ as your Savior, your recovery is still an idolatry.
All about you.
Exactly.
Yep,
my recovery, my program, all that. Well, tonight we're on step one where we admit we are powerless, that our life is unmanageable. We're powerless over drugs, alcohol. Bill, my next breath comes at the mercy of an all-sovereign God, and so does yours. And we are powerless over everything. So maybe the reason we can't change is we really don't want to do the work, but we want the result, but we don't want to let go of what we have, too. I know in the last days of my using, I knew I should quit. I was going to go to prison, but it was my only pleasure source, even though it was killing me. And that told me that there's something seriously wrong with me, but I needed that to survive. And there's a lot of people listening tonight that have been there or might be there.
I agree. And Georgia, you know, I'm always there to help a guy like you, as long as it doesn't involve time or money.
Time or money or a lot of effort.
Yeah, but I get what you mean about it. It's not something that's easy to do. It's a lot of work.
Part of the problem for a lot of us is we have to realize that we're insane at the time. If you're in sin, you're insane, I think.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe a lie is the truth and act upon it, that's the great deception. Oh, this won't hurt me. I can do it one more time. I deserve this.
Mm-hmm.
you know, God still loves me. He does. But what are you losing by not being in his fellowship?
Good point. George, let's talk about step one here just a little bit before we bring Jamie on, because, you know, I've been thinking about 1 John chapter 3, verse 20. It says, if our hearts condemn us, we know that God is greater than our hearts and he knows everything. So yep. Let's start with connecting that to step one and say, okay, the gig is up. God knows everything. You can't hide. You can't run. The only place to run is into his arms, not out, not away from him.
Oh, that's a great point. And that's what we tend to do. When I really need to run to God, I'm ashamed and I run away from him. And that comes from the enemy, I think. You're not good enough. This time you really did it. You know, this time you did it.
Mm-hmm.
And God loves us. And we have a hard time figuring God out because we put our limitations on him. God can only be what I think he is, and my mind is very limited. Step one is, I can't do this. Gosh, I really don't even want to do this. I need God's help because I should want to do this, and I don't. That my total depravity. I hate to steal from John Calvin, but I believe that.
He's dead, though, isn't he?
Yeah, so I'm sure he's got lawyers, though, don't you think? You know?
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. George, what do you say, enough of us, and let's bring Jamie on.
I would have said that a long time ago, but let's get to that.
No, I would agree. Jamie, welcome to the show.
Thank you. What a privilege.
Hey, thanks. I know for a fact that you are a busy guy, and I know Sundays are a busy day because you pastor a church, and Monday rolls around, and you're probably trying to get caught up. I don't know if this is a day off for you.
It's not. It's right back in the saddle.
Yeah. Well, anyway, welcome to the show. We're so glad you could be on. Tell us a little bit about your book, Living Well, because the whole idea and the idea that we're all, you know, we need help getting unstuck is really a big idea.
Yeah. And the goal is to live well. The name of the book is Love Well.
Oh,
and
Love
I think
Well.
Both of those are interchangeable. You know, I was really looking forward to my time with you guys because so much of the verbiage in the book is consistent with some of the conversation in recovery. When it came time to plant a church, my wife and I did youth ministry for 13 years, and we just felt like God was calling us to plant a church. But I went kicking and screaming. To me, being a youth to be a pastor was a demotion. I loved working with teenagers. But we had this angst and struggle, and some of that was what you were talking about earlier in the program, that like you guys, I found myself walking into a church feeling there was a game I had to play, and I was always failing at this game. I was too honest. I made people uncomfortable. I already got a review on the book where somebody said this just book made me uncomfortable, and that's been part of my life for a long time because I've had this piece where I just feel like I have trouble living without some level of self-awareness and honesty, and it's the folks in the recovery movement who really inspired me and I think have been an example to me to go what you were talking about. We have to call it our powerlessness. And To get unstuck, it begins with, again, to use another phrase, you can't heal what you don't acknowledge. And so when it came down to plant a church, we said, well, what if from day one we just were honest? Like we kind of called it out. In the earliest days, what would it be like to shape a community that way? And in our church, it's called The Journey. In many ways, we could call it The Journey Experiment. It still is. We're about 8 years old now. And there's probably 50 different denominations. We did a survey, I don't know, about 4 years ago. 50 different denominations represented here. And if you said, well, what's the one thing that holds everybody together? It's a lot of different theological perspectives. It's that the folks here that wind up sticking a journey acknowledge they're broken. That's probably the one core theme. And that seems to be the centerpiece for getting unstuck.
Gosh, could you say that again? That really...
Yeah, we're both a little bit in a paused
no,
awe
that was
right
really,
now. Yeah.
It was really deep.
I'm taking notes.
Well, I'm still working it out myself. But, you know, what I experienced with religious people, my dad was a pastor, and ironically, he and I had a wonderful perspective growing up and still do, and I'm quite grateful for that. But I did grow, you know, like from the time I was in the womb, I've been in the church my whole life, and I had some wonderful experiences with that, but I had some not-so-wonderful experiences. And some of that came from what I experienced in probably about five different churches I served in a domination system, a power over system, that was sometimes manipulative, and also forms of legalism, in religious in all the negative sense of that word. And there was an absence of love. And so coming through that, and Brené Brown, her book, you guys are probably familiar with it, on shame. Yeah, what a phenomenal piece on shame. But, you know, the idea that should is a shaming word.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of finger waving and spitting and should that came out. And Sunday felt more like a spanking rather than an invitation to heal.
Wow. Jamie, we're going to take just a really short break. When we come back, we're going to have more time with Jamie George. You're listening to Real Recovery. Bill Arnold and George Fraser will be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you joined us tonight. Whether it was on purpose or by accident, either way, we will take it. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, Aaron on the board. We're talking tonight to Jamie George, a pastor from Franklin, Tennessee. He's written a book called Loving Well. I got it right this time, George. That's very embarrassing to actually get the book wrong. And we're talking tonight about the honesty factor that you have in high regard in your church, which is very interesting to all of us here in the studio. And the brokenness at where we connect, Jamie, I'm curious, do you run the risk ever of having the church be an altar of brokenness where you worship at the altar of brokenness?
That's a great question. And I would say yes early on. Because we embraced it and because I think it was so foreign, and we're down in the buckle of the Bible Belt, because it was so foreign to most people's experiences that we could come in and be honest, it really became a place of lament, and there was great beauty in that. And as a matter of fact, two of our worship leaders, when it came time to lead worship, were like, we can't find any worship songs that describe our community, so we're going to have to write them. And they actually wound up forming a band called All Sons and Daughters, and interestingly enough, it sounds like a lot of other people have connected with their songs. Like, so one of the worship songs is I Need a Reason to Sing. Can I start there? Mm. You know, which would seem very much like the psalmist. Mm. But while there was a great beauty to it, there was a season after a year or two where we were like, you know, this is awesome that we're calling this out, and this is unique and wonderful, but we can't stay here. We're going to just be stuck here spinning in our brokenness. So the validation is beautiful. We're not alone. We're not alone on the planet. And that was, by the way, it was a huge epiphany for so many of us. Like, oh, wow, you struggle too? But we can't stay there. And there has to be continued movement. And how do we not get lost in victimization then, but call one another to repentance, to change, and then to celebration? And so we really kind of had to work that out. Like, there was just maybe 3-4 years ago, we were like, we have to learn to celebrate more. And it's interesting because we continue to find people who come to us in that very wounded place. As you mentioned early in our conversation, religiously wounded. I mean, some people walk in the door and it's like they physically duck. Like, it's been 17 years, but someone told me this was a safe place to possibly work it out. And so we live in the tension of going, let's continue to be honest and lament and speak of brokenness, but at the same time, we cannot ignore the celebration of what Jesus has done for us.
Bill, I like that a lot, because in recovery, there's a real tendency to keep the focus on us, even though that's our problem, in that I'm so bad and this, and we lose that we're supposed to go, I acknowledge my total depravity, but let's focus on Jesus, and I am responsible once I realize what is wrong with me to work on that. Fair?
Beautifully said. Because we've got to look at the cross.
Yes.
So there's death, but life comes from death.
I love that.
I do too. Jamie, I have a question in terms of unstuck, getting unstuck, which is a lot of people struggle with it, and I know I've struggled with it from time to time. But I think there's something about it's hard to get unstuck until you hear the truth, until you're understood. When you give someone the gift of understanding, I think that's
so
sometimes
good.
When you get unstuck, you go, oh, finally someone gets it.
Yes. Yeah, and how rare to find someone in your life who's actually a good listener.
Yeah, who can listen without and suspend criticism and suspend the history they have with you and just be in the moment with you and listen to what you have to say.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and that's beautifully said. That's it, because a lot of people are just waiting to exchange commentary.
Yeah, they just carry on parallel monologues. I'm just waiting for you to stop talking so I can start talking.
Well said. And I think to try and get to the heart, like how to really listen to someone and pause long enough to go, I want to listen to your heart. And, well, that's uncomfortable. And I think one of the reasons it's uncomfortable is when you sit with someone who's vulnerable, you feel exposed yourself.
Yes, but we join each other in our brokenness and then share the victory in our Savior, correct?
Yes, correct. But
you're right.
If
it's
you
want
to live in denial, it's tough to get there.
Oh, gosh. And it's hard to go back. You know, we work with addicts. I'm in recovery. Bill's been volunteering for about 30 years. And we were talking about hanging around these guys. You pick up where they're at, and you got to have really good boundaries. You know, it's tough.
Oh, that's so well said. And I'm naturally an empath, and I have twin sons that are 18 years old. And one of my boys, my oldest by a minute, is very much the same way. And the beauty of growing up in a home where, you know, we value emotional intelligence and so forth is that he's connected to his emotions, he's aware. But it's a little bit like a baby with a power tool. Like, one of the things we've had to deal with him as a teenager is he feels people's pain so beautifully, but it actually messes him up. He hasn't lived enough life to know. He's working out, how do I set boundaries on not owning this? So that's so well said.
Well, the other side of that coin, I think, is we can feel other people's pain and not feel our own.
And
we don't know where our feelings come from. It's hard to recognize where they come from.
Yeah, and a lot of times we're told that our feelings aren't right. I don't get to choose my feelings, but I do get to choose what I do with them. And so that's hard, but I don't want to harden up either. I got a question. It's kind of a little bit of a transition here, but we've got a lot of people listening to our show that have tried to quit a behavior and a lifestyle many times, and they make progress and they go back. Any words to address that?
I would try and do my best, I guess, to speak from experience and what I understand of Scripture, trying to put those two things together. It's that it seems like we as human beings have this ever-present tendency to want to time travel. And I want to go in the past and live in my shame, or I want to forecast into the future of what might be. And it seems like Jesus quite simply is saying, don't worry about tomorrow. That be rooted in the present. Be rooted in today. I think this is the reason for communion, the Eucharist, for Lord's Supper. Like, I think, like, I actually want you to remember, like, with bread and wine, like, it's tangible, it's touchable. You're having this little meal together of remembrance. A water baptism. I think those things are placed into our faith to keep rooting us to the ground, to keep us connected and go, don't leave the moment. We all, at least I do, and I think Scripture speaks to us, just have such a tendency to leave the moment. I might not make it tomorrow, but I'm going to stay present today, and I'm going to walk today into the unknown, and that's called faith.
Jamie, what when you're trying to get unstuck, and I'm stuck on this subject because it applies to so much in my life, but you know, what disqualifies you from receiving a gift? Is it your pride? Is it your stubbornness? Is it your fear of being exposed? And you almost feel more comfortable being stuck than putting yourself into that pool of vulnerability.
Yeah. Well, here's the beauty. I actually don't think we ever get disqualified. I think the nature of the grace of God is that it's this liquid that seeks us out even when we run to our own cell and lock the door behind us and hide in the corner in the fetal position. That the grace is always coming to find us. Sometimes it's harder to see or recognize or feel it than other times. So I think, like, that's the ever-present love of God. On my best day, I'm not good enough for him, and on my worst day, I'm not farther than he can reach. But practically speaking, I think without vulnerability, you can't receive. And isn't that the nature of the gospel? We have this God who's initiating with us, and I have to acknowledge that I need something by receiving him. And I do think you tapped into that. The very first place is I have to be exposed, and most of the time I don't want to be.
Well, part of that, too, guys, I think if God is sovereign, which we believe he is, then nothing happens by mistake in this world. And so it gets back to a lack of faith that I don't see the whole picture. I don't do this well. I'm going to sound like I do here, okay? So give me some slack, but I don't. And yeah. I think it's a lack of faith that, you know, he really does have us. And the grace you're talking about, how can we increase our faith? You've worked with a lot of people and helped them, move in decision-making. How can we increase our faith?
I don't think we do it alone. It has to be. Isolation kills us. It crushes our spirit. And I think this idea of where two or more are gathered, there I am also. Jesus is just constantly drawing us back to, we malfunction apart from community. We need koinonia. We need we need this fellowship thing to happen. And somehow, in the interaction with other spirit containers, somehow there's an energy that happens. Somehow there's this love that's pulled out. There's something compelling about being with one another. I'm inspired by someone else who makes it. I'm sad by someone who falls. Somehow the strength comes, and I don't have it worked out, but I believe with all my heart for the people who have made it, and here 8 years into this journey experience, the folks who I've watched grow spiritually, every single one of them, it's because they're in community with other people.
Boy, there's just no getting around that, is there?
No, there isn't.
And it's funny because it seems like the world is working against community with all the social media and digital everything.
Yes.
You know, rather sit at home. I mean, you just look around and everyone's looking down at their phone. Nobody's actually trying to talk to anybody. And I think that's breeding more isolation, more loneliness.
Well said. Yeah, and I think we need little practical things like baskets at the front door, like drop your phone in there. Like, I mean, I think we need little things like that because it's not going to get better naturally. That's only going to get worse.
I find when I go to a recovery meeting, a lot of times I don't want to go, Jamie, and every time I leave, it's kind of like going to church. Every time you walk out the door afterwards, you're really glad you went. but you can have a million reasons not to do it. And I think the isolation thing is one of the relapse patterns for a lot of us as we start isolating.
So well said. When I sat down to write the book, I tried to say, my own story, yes, but how could I take the journey story and somehow put it into print? And one of the goals was, even when I was writing, the layout is different. People who see the book will notice there's a lot of space between lines and things like that. And the publisher said, you know, we've never done a book with this kind of format. Like, why is this? And I said, well, part of it's practical. It reads a little bit more like a web blog, I think, for people who are used to reading online. But the other piece is I think there needs to be space to feel. Because otherwise, you go into a meeting, a church, you go into a recovery group, if you just get information and there's no space to actually feel and reflect, then I think we wind up right back. We have like a moment of inspiration, but it doesn't stick, and so we remain stuck.
And I don't think any of us need more techniques, do we?
Right.
I mean, isn't
application seems to be everywhere.
Right, but I think there's a need. From what I can tell, is to be just simply in fellowship with each other and with God and be in right relationships with each other and a right relationship with God.
Yeah, and it's form, not formula. Like, there's a form. I'm going to get together with my brothers and sisters, but I can't actually predict how this relational exchange will work tonight. And I think there's a faith, and that's part of that faith piece. Like, there's a faith piece even in relationships, a faith and a risk and trust. And isn't that really every moment of our day, I think, is surrounded by that one statement. I talk about that in chapter 11, that is God trustworthy? If he's not, I better control my domain. I need to do everything I can to get as much control as possible because, well, if God's not trustworthy, who is?
Yeah.
But if he is trustworthy, that changes everything.
And Jamie, I'd appreciate it if you don't bring up the word chapter 11 again in front of George. It's kind of a sensitive subject. So we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we have a few more segments with Jamie George. You're listening to Real Recovery. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Real Recovery. George, when do you ever tire of Cinnamon Girl?
I don't.
I don't either. We are in full agreement on that one. We're talking tonight to Jamie George. He's from Tennessee. He's written a book called Loving Well. Jamie, I have a question about the consumer mentality people come into your church with. It sounds like they come in, help me. I'm not saying that's what they're saying, but what George was talking about just before the break, I'm tying into the idea that we sometimes miss the fact that going to church means that we might be a blessing to somebody that day versus going to church and saying, what do you have for me this week?
Yeah, that's a great question. I of the folks who find their way to Journey, most of them are so far past the help me thing. They've given up saying help me. Most of the folks that find their way here don't actually believe the church can help. So we tend to collect quite a few people who are saying, do you see me? And so the folks who come to, I suppose from a certain perspective, you could still call that consumer. There is something hopeful within them that they'll find something that will benefit them. They just tend to come in such a desperate place. Now, here's the interesting piece to that. The beauty is, if in a very short period of time they can feel known, they actually seem to bypass the natural kind of stereotypical consumer mentality, which goes, hey, I want my favorite softball league or Bible study or prayer group or whatever. What's interesting is when they really feel known, there's this immediate compulsion to share that and to give it away. So much so that we actually had to reorganize our church in such a way to help create avenues with which to serve and give back. So, for instance, we ask a portion of our folks not to come on Sunday. We were organized by small group communities, and so we ask about five of those every Sunday not to come into the service, but instead to come in their grubby clothes and be prepared to go serve. And we serve at a therapeutic horse farm, and we serve with an Alzheimer's inpatient care center. We serve with orphans. We serve with mentoring moms. And sometimes it's painting the local school or whatever. But actually, I think when people really heal, there's this compulsion to want to go help someone else.
I agree with that. One of the best things I've ever heard about recovery, guys, is a guy didn't make it in recovery. He tried to quit drinking, Jamie, a few times, and he kept going back to drinking. He was talking to an old-timer who had long-term recovery, and he said to the old-timer, this recovery thing doesn't work for me. And the guy looked at him and he said, you're supposed to work for the recovery community. It's not supposed to work for you. And I like that, what you're saying about the church. If you have this, you're going to be like the guy in the Bible that sold everything he had.
Yes.
And you want to give it away. And that's, to me, that was the sign of a transformed heart, is that you start caring about other people because of what God did for you.
That's so well said. And the beauty there is there are actually quite a few people who then don't come to our church. They're not interested because we don't call it membership, we call it partnership here. But if you want to partner with us, it's not optional. You have to be in a small group community, and you have to serve locally in the community somewhere. Well, there are a lot of people who go, like, I'm not really interested in that. We're like, that's cool. I mean, you can come and kind of crash the family reunion every Sunday and look in on our story, but to be part of the family, we just feel like these practices in particular are really important to the health of the body.
Well, if we say, Bill, that we believe what we do, you know, why does our behavior indicate we don't? He had talked earlier about, do we really trust God? I think that's the key issue, Jamie. Lack of trust. I think all my sinful behavior roots around that. Is that fair?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And the frustrating part, right, isn't it, guys, that we both can say that when we can hang up the phone and, you know, get some information on a text or whatever else and immediately get spun out, you know, like just
totally.
This frustration with the flesh.
Totally. You know, the other thing, Jamie, that I connect to the trustworthiness of God is God good? Because if he's good, how am I in this set of circumstances?
You know, I love that, because to add to that, the piece that we're trying to communicate, to many people who are wounded people, and a lot of people who come who are artistically inclined and asking questions about the deeper things, is to say to them, hey, by the way, God likes you. you probably heard the phrase "God loves you" before. You know, probably maybe heard that a lot of times. Whether or not you agree or disagree or whatever else, we just have a new phrase: God likes you. He actually, he thinks you're cool. Like he likes you. That's a very new concept for many of
them.
Yeah,
like God is obligated to love us.
Yes, yes, yes. That's it.
You know, so the fact that you say that he likes you, it's like, really? That's kind of that's kind of cool. Because I know God just likes George as a friend.
I'm cool. Well, I used to be.
You used to be cool.
Long time ago.
That was a 15-minute deal. But anyway,
yeah.
It just sounds like it's a really fascinating approach to help people get the needle moved in their life, especially if
they're
stuck.
That's our prayer. Yeah.
Yeah, because there's so much damage that's going on. There's so much baggage that people walk in with.
Yeah, it's funny. When I first was saying, okay, God, you know, I'll go be a pastor, I was asking because it was time to, like, make business cards. You know, we were, like, a couple months old. And I was like, is there another term? Like, do I have to use that term? Can I be, like, a spiritual navigator or something? Is there because what you said is just, you know, if I'm on the airplane and I don't want to talk to the person next to me, I just tell them I'm a pastor. The conversation's really short.
Yeah. Jamie, one of the questions I have is when I talk to people in recovery, I sometimes say, tell me about the God you rejected.
Ooh, that's really good.
And they usually start by saying, okay, all right, well, I was 12 and my mom got cancer. And I thought, well, okay, this is it. If you're a loving God, I'm not interested. And I would say, yeah, I can see I would probably want to reject that God too.
Man, I'm taking notes while you're talking. That's so good.
Well, I'm just wondering, do we get the right information about God, or are we just writing him off with information that's really not good information?
Yeah, because don't all of us enter the world, or, I mean, I suppose we actually do enter the world as well, but we come out of childhood and adolescence with a certain operating system, mm-hmm. in our DNA, our family of origin, our culture, certain mentors. So, you know, it even makes me wonder, you know, I think about my own children, you know, at some point, they're going to have their own storm-weathered faith. Like, they need to be challenged, and they're going to have to wrestle with, you know, the stuff I heard my parents say. Like, is it legit? I mean, do I believe? You know, again, doing youth ministry for so long, you watch that happen in that first year out of high school. Kids are so impressionable and all those things, and just going, what was the operating system they were given? And then even with children, do I hold this loosely enough to go, the gospel is strong enough to break through faulty operating systems and to sustain my children with whatever truth we appropriately gave them? And to me, that's this other faith piece of just trusting. Again, what you guys said is back to trust. Is, you know, do I trust that God will do it? But I think it's a good point. I think we do. We tend to think of God in a specific way, and we get stuck there.
I think it goes back to faith. I really like the thing about community. We're going to find community somewhere.
Yeah.
So if I don't find it in recovery church people, I'm going to go find it out on the street. But we're going to fill that need somewhere.
That's good.
And all our guys that we work with, most of them, Jamie, they start using around 14, 15 years old, and they start hanging out with a different group of guys.
Mm.
And when they get back, if God allows them through his mercy and grace to get into recovery and a relationship with him, they wind up hanging out with a new set of guys. You got to find a new group of guys, and that's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you are who you hang out with, right?
Oh, yeah, and your church sounds like I could just go there and be George.
You know, it's so funny. Listening to the two of you, I'm like, I want to hang with you guys because you're so real and so open, and that's very much the community here. The person who's the expert, they just don't last long around our community.
Well, we go to bed at about 8:30 or 9, so we could be there, you know, early, right, Bill?
Yeah.
You know?
It's sad. Well, I sing along to elevator music. I'm sort of at that stage of life.
Oh, never mind about hanging out.
Oh, okay.
But there was that, Bill, we look at the Cheers theme song where everybody knows your name. You're going to find a place.
Yeah, it's critical. It's critical to have a sense of belonging, sense of having people understand who you are, accept you for who you are. You know, and if they don't find that in church, they'll go somewhere else.
It would be really nice to find a church that I like as much as my recovery meetings. That would be great.
Mm. That's been our prayer for Journey.
That would be great, yep.
So, Jamie, tell us a little bit more about the book, and tell me, let's get away from chapter 11, because I know George got
yes.
yeah,
got real white in the face when you brought that up. So Give us something else to chew on.
Well, the first page is The Darkest Place in My Marriage. So the book is part memoir, part encouragement in finding Jesus. But that piece, the marriage piece, was, you know what, if we're going to talk about the love of God here at Journey, we often talk about starting with our own story. So it didn't make sense for Angie and I. If you're going to write a book, it seems like you need to start with our story. And there are lots of facets to that story, and I didn't include all the sin. You know, we could write multiple volumes. But let's start with, you know, what was the centerpiece of our points of struggle? And for Angie, it was codependency. And, of course, I'm sure you guys talk about that at length on the show, but this idea of if you're not okay, I'm not okay. And she'd learned early on in her story to, you know, to send out radar signals to everybody she met, and those sonar to know how she should feel. And so her definition for feeling was based on, well, who was in the room. And for me, I grew up a firstborn. I was a pleaser, even a tendency toward denial and minimization based on my story and based on my parents. I grew up very close to my grandparents in that greatest generation. And I think that was very dominant in that culture. If you listen to a World War II veteran talk about his experience in the war, I just recently watched a Ken Burns documentary on it. It's really interesting because what you'll hear them say over and over again, if they actually tell a story that was really vulnerable or they actually talk about combat or something, at the end they'll close by saying something like, yeah, that was really not fun. And they're talking about their best friend's head rolling off next to them. And they use these little phrases, and it hit me one day. I was watching this documentary going, oh, wow, like their coping mechanism almost for an entire generation was denial and minimization. Like, I can't ever speak about this, or I have to minimize it because I can't actually speak to the terror and horror of the moment. And again, being connected to my grandparents and actually having just a love of history, I realized I picked up some of that. And so in my mind, like, it's never that bad. And, you know, tomorrow's a new day. And, you know, we'll click our heels and go on. And what Angie and I had to come to grips with was this is the two of these things is not working with one another. And she had to find that what she longed for, which ultimately was Eden, her husband could never completely fulfill. And I had to learn to set boundaries and to say the word no. And as a firstborn performer, that was difficult.
Jamie, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to have more Jamie George on Real Recovery. Welcome back, everyone. Real Recovery. So glad you're with us tonight. We're talking to Jamie George. He's written a book called Loving Well, and he communicates well and has some brilliant thoughts, and we are loving him on the show tonight. Jamie, why are we so needy? Why are we so selfish?
Man, that broken part of us. I think we're all scrambling for something. You know, we tend to put our identity in the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
My dad does some counseling, but Dad used to say, you know, I think we have kind of three predominant idols in our life, comfort, power, and approval. And we tend to find our identity in one of those three idols. And, you know, addictions all spread from there. And I loved what you guys said on the front end, that addiction and idolatry, I think they're one in the same, in many ways we could use the same words. But we want to worship something. It's in us. And we give our worship to the wrong thing, and thus we find our identity in the wrong thing, and that leaves us needy.
And what about the selfish part? I mean, it isn't that what is the biggest problem for all of us is just our own selfishness?
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I think that stems from there. I'm trying to satisfy something deep within, and so part of the quest is trying to come to grips with what is that. And then the other side of that is, well, I don't really want to know what it is. And I think we tend to vacillate, you know, what's the term, pendulamic propensity? We tend to swing from one end to the other. You know, like, I either don't want to know anything or I'm going to be obsessed with knowledge. And I think you look at Greek culture. This is what I love about Paul's emails to all his churches, you know, the epistles in the New Testament. I mean, I love that because he's constantly going after this obsession with knowledge. And he's saying, yeah, it's not that knowledge doesn't have importance, but I think it's 1 Corinthians. He says, knowledge may make you feel important, but it's love that strengthens the church.
Mm-hmm. Our IQs are about room temperature, so that one word...
The pendulum deal?
That lost us.
We're going to take this and listen to it. We'll practice that. We'll have it down by next week. We'll edit it out.
That was given to me from somebody else. I'm just passing it on.
Oh, it's good. It's very impressive.
Yeah, whatever it means.
I wonder if we could get back before the break. You were talking about what your wife wanted from you and what you wanted from her, and it sounded like there was stuff you could only get from God. Is that fair?
Well said. Yeah, well said. Maybe the great gift of the curse, to go back to Genesis chapter 1, maybe the great gift of the husband having to work by the sweat of his brow and find his ego stroked by his job, and the woman's curse of childbirth and reproduction, and having this curse of wanting to dominate the man and rise up over him and get her ego from her husband or from another man. Maybe the blessing of that curse is that God instituted it to remind us to never get too comfortable. If that curse wasn't there, it's quite possible, maybe even probable, that we would coast and think life is just okay and satisfying. I think the curse reminds us about Eden, that we were created for something more, and to remind us that more is out there, and that intimacy with God, the intimacy that we long for, is only found in Him. And that we get moments of it, tastes of it with our spouse and with other people. Then, of course, the intimacy looks different ways. But that ultimately that walk in the garden in the cool of the day, there's only one person who offers that perfectly. And if we would trust Him and follow Him, the beauty of heaven is, I think there's a heaven is here, but the heaven not yet part, that we're working toward that restoration and redemption.
I like the comfortable part. I would guess, if I'm honest with myself, I'm a country club Christian. I want to go to a church in a nice area that has good air conditioning and comfortable seats. But I know that if I get comfortable in my recovery, I'm going backwards.
Mm.
And so I'm reading a book that a friend gave to me called Radical that's very uncomfortable for me to read. And I'm looking at this that I've decided what Christianity is rather than what the Bible says it is. Is that true?
Wow. Yeah. Man, don't we all have that tendency? It's back to what you guys said. You know, what was the God that we rejected? What's the God that we've created?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. In effect, then, we're worshiping ourselves, aren't we?
Yeah. Yes. Well said.
And that's part of the problem. What causes people to feel numb because they've created someone that is out of their own head.
Yeah, wouldn't you say that in Western Christianity, that unfortunately this is descriptive of a large portion of it, that rather than finding a God who is divine and beyond us, who we don't fully understand, who's this awesome power and mystery, rather we follow a God who's kind of our administrative assistant?
Well said. Amen. Yeah, that's really right on.
Oh, you don't want to bother him unless you need him, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd rather consult somebody who's really smart than surrender to someone who might really change my life.
Right.
I think
we tend to just kind of tap in, you know, like, you know, oh, that guy really could use you to do this for me, right?
Yeah,
now.
A little fist bump, huh?
Yeah, that's it, yes.
The surrender piece, Bill, that you talked about is huge. We were talking about step one, where we admit we're powerless, that our lives are unmanageable. I give up. That's surrender. And then to follow what Jesus says, that's a tall order.
We're not really, none of us are really into death a whole lot.
Right.
You know, John 12:24, unless a grain of seed falls to the ground and dies, it won't produce much fruit. And in the most horrific time of our, when we were like the lowest of lows, I was just reading along in John, you know, one of those moments where, and I just stumbled upon this verse and I'm like, and I wrote in the margin of my Bible, oh, so you're killing me. Like, that's what's happening here. I don't look forward to death, and yet it's all around me. The seasons, everything is telling me that life comes through death. And there's a piece where I talk a little bit about faith. I want, again, each day, is it a matter of, am I going to jump off the cliff or do I have to get kicked off it?
Hmm. Interesting point.
Well, we have long pauses here because we're thinking about
this
stuff.
Well, we are thinking about it. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm very comfortable with death because of the, you know, radio show I do every week with George. well, I'm not too freaked out by that. But I find that last comment absolutely fascinating. Do I jump off or do I get pushed?
Yeah.
That's why I had to stop and pause and think about it.
Well, when you jump off, you see somebody coming. You know, it's not that you came up with that on your own.
Yeah, that's right. And there's a certain exhilaration. If you jump off, there's at least some anticipation. Like, I did this thing intentionally. We get kicked off, we tend to be flailing and screaming. And it seems like the loving God of the universe goes, the only way we're going to make it together is if you jump or I push you.
Yeah, it's like the guy we're working with that decides to go to treatment. I decided to go to treatment. It was either that or he's got a 5-year prison sentence.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Jamie, I want to keep I want to ask a few more questions about getting unstuck. When you're talking about your wife, and you said she was a little codependent?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, we both are.
Okay, you both are. So you can speak from your own experience. You worry about confronting and sharing your feelings. Do you worry about that as a codependent person?
Yeah, very much so.
Are you a people pleaser, and do you try to avoid conflicts and problems?
You know, what's funny is I think I'm at the place, I'm 44, I think I'm at the place where in general the staff that I work with, people I interact with on a daily basis, there's a certain strength there that doesn't get triggered too often in me. I'm pretty good there. But with her, yes. And yeah, I married an Irish girl, and the first, you know, when we were talking earlier about feelings, the first feeling that she tends to have is an anger feeling. And, you know, she might get around to sadness and hurt and some of the other feelings, but that because her first feeling is anger, and if I go back into my story, some of my own spiritual abuse, and I speak about this in the book a little bit, is, you know, I was around every spiritual leader in my life who was the point person, who's kind of the lead guy, senior pastor or lead director or whatever. They were the D personality in the DISC profile. They were the really strong, or you can call them the type A, whatever. But most of them led with a form of anger. And there was manipulation. And looking back, I think for some of the guys, I think there was a lack of awareness. I think part of it was their own training. So I don't carry resentment toward it, but my reality was that there was a lot of anger that I saw around me when it came to people who were leading or guiding or whatever. And there was some abuse that came with that. So I think what gets triggered in me, and then even through our years of marriage, is I go, oh, I don't want to share my feeling because she's going to be hacked off. Like, and not then we got a 3-hour conversation. You know, I start forecasting in my mind. So I have to do a lot of work there to go, you know, and we have to have a lot of really important words, you know, so that neither one, there's like a landmine, you know, landmines around us, that neither one of us, you know, something gets blown up. And that's taken us a lot of work to find the right ways to enter those difficult conversations.
Don't look to me to say anything intelligent.
Oh my! I'm a little stunned right now. Did you spend time and energy trying to say something to her that would produce the lowest amount of response? That would be. I don't even know what I'm trying to say.
Of course he did.
Of course he did.
I was gonna say, wow! You sound like a guy who's experienced. Yes, all the time.
Not only that her response wouldn't be 3 hours long.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
the game comes on in 20 minutes.
Right.
That's so true. But before I understood boundaries, I thought I was supposed to, like, oh, no, if this is a 5-hour conversation, I would physically be twitching in the chair, like, considering leaping through the window as a better option.
Oh, you're killing me.
But I didn't know. I was like, ah, that's what a loving husband does, you know. Like, and I had all my Judeo-Christian, like, unconditional loving things, and, you know, my firstborn pleasing thing, you know. And I realized I actually wasn't helping her. I was not acting out of love. I was acting out of duty. I was performing, and it wasn't serving either one of us.
Well, we have lots and lots more to talk about. This is just, we just scratched it, George.
We have to have you back on. I hope you can do that sometime.
I'd love to. You guys are a ball.
Because there's a lot more that we need to get out of your brain, because it's such amazingly good stuff. Your book, Loving Well. How do we track you down? What is your website? We'll put it on our website here. But
yeah, the easiest thing is just jamiegeorge.com.
Okay. And did you ever get confused about the two first names?
I haven't, but I've had many people. Like you said, yeah, I went to college and my RA refused to believe me when I told him my name. He just thought I was being a punk freshman.
And you might have been, huh?
Which we got. Yeah, there was some truth to that, too, yes.
Well, Jamie, God bless you and your ministry and your church, and we'll certainly look forward to our next conversation. Thanks for being such an amazingly great guest and being part of Real Recovery.
Absolutely, Jamie. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Yep. Blessings.
Yeah, blessings. And to all you listeners, thank you so much for being with us tonight on Real Recovery. We hope that you can get unstuck. And we just thank you for listening and have a great week. Good night and God bless. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, The Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.